wearing march or the never-ending silent black trunks that came and passed in countless thousands. The only change was a gradual building of the wind from somewhere in the shrouded night, whispering its first faint cry, then growing to a numbing crescendo of sound that gripped the tired minds of the three travelers with spellbinding magic. It called to them, reminding them of the briefness of the days behind and those ahead, warning them that they were mortal creatures of no consequence in that land, crying to them to lie down in the peacefulness of sleep. They heard and fought against the tempting plea with the last of their strength, concentrating mindlessly on putting one foot before the other in an endless succession of footsteps. 1 minute, they were all there in a ragged line. The next, Shay looked ahead, and Menyon was gone. At first, he could not accept the fact. His normally keen mind hazy with lack of sleep, and he continued to walk slowly ahead, looking vainly for the shadowy form of the tall Highlander. Then abruptly he stopped as he realized, with stabbing fear, that they had somehow become separated. He clutched wildly for Flick and grabbed his brother's loose tunic as the fatigued Veilman stumbled into him, dead on his feet. Flick looked unthinkingly at him, not knowing, not even caring why they had stopped, his only hope that he could collapse at last and sleep. The wind in the darkness of the forest seemed to howl in wild glee, and Shay called desperately for the Highland Prince and heard only the echoes of his own futile cry. He called again and again, his voice rising to a near scream of desperation and fear, but nothing came back except the sound of his own voice, muffled and distorted by the wild whistling of the wind through the great oaks, whisking and wrapping about the silent trunks and limbs, and filtering out among the rustling leaves. Once he thought he heard his own name called. Answering eagerly, he dragged himself and the exhausted Flick through the maze of trees toward the sound of the cry. But there was nothing. Dropping to the forest floor, he called until his voice gave out, but only the wind replied in mocking laughter to tell him that he had lost the Prince of Lee. Chapter 7 When Shay awoke the following day, it was noon. The bright sunlight streamed into his half-open eyes with burning sharpness as he lay on his back in the tall grass. At first he could remember nothing of the previous night except that he and Flick had become separated from Menyon in the Black Oaks. Half awake, he raised himself on one elbow, looked about sleepily, and discovered that he was in an open field. Behind him rose the forbidding Black Oaks, and he knew that somehow, after losing Menyon, he had managed to find his way through the dread forest before collapsing in exhaustion. Everything was hazy in his mind after their separation. He could not imagine how he had summoned the strength to finish the march. He could not even recall breaking free of the endless forest to find the grass-covered lowlands he now surveyed. The whole experience seemed strangely distant as he rubbed his eyes and sighed contentedly in the warm sunlight and fresh air. For the first time in days, the Anar forests seemed to be within reach. Suddenly, he remembered Flick and looked anxiously about for his brother. A moment later, he spotted the stocky form collapsed in sleep several yards away. Shay climbed slowly to his feet and stretched leisurely, taking time to locate his pack. He bent down and rummaged through its contents until he located the pouch containing the elf stones, reassuring himself that they were still safely within his possession. Then picking up the pack, he trudged over to his sleeping brother and gently shook him. Flick stirred grudgingly, clearly unhappy that anyone would disturb his slumber. Shay was forced to shake him several times before he at last reluctantly opened his eyes and squinted up sourly. Upon seeing Shay, he raised himself to a sitting position and looked slowly about.
"Hey, we made it!" he exclaimed.
But I don't know how. I don't remember anything after losing Minion except walking and walking until I thought that my legs would drop off. Shay grinned in agreement and clapped his brother on the back. He felt a measure of gratitude when he thought of all they had been through together. So many hardships and dangers, and still Flick could laugh about it. He felt a sudden, keen sense of love for Flick, a brother who, while not related by blood, was even closer for his deep friendship. "We made it all right," he smiled, "and we'll make it the rest of the way, too, if I can get you off the ground." "The meanness in some people is unbelievable." Flick shook his head in mock disbelief and then climbed heavily to his feet. He looked questioningly over at Shay. "Minion? Lost. I don't know where." Flick looked away, sensing his brother's bitter disappointment, but unwilling to admit to himself that they were not better off without the Highland Prince. He instinctively distrusted Minion, yet the Highlander had saved his life back in the forest, and that was not something Flick would forget easily. He thought about it a minute or so longer, then clapped his brother lightly on the shoulder. "Don't worry about that rogue. He'll turn up. Probably at the wrong time." Shay nodded quietly, and the conversation quickly turned to the task at hand. They agreed that the best plan was to journey northward until they reached the Silver River, which flowed into the Rainbow Lake, and follow it upstream to the Anar. With any luck, Minion would also follow the river and catch up to them within a few days. His skill as a woodsman should enable him to escape the Black Oaks, and at some point beyond, find their trail and follow it to wherever they were. Shay was reluctant to leave his friend, but was wise enough to realize that any attempt at a search for him in the Black Oaks could only result in their own entanglement. Moreover, the danger they faced if discovered by the searching skull-bearers far outweighed any risks Minion might encounter, even in that forest. There was nothing for them to do but to continue on. The pair walked rapidly through the green, quiet lowlands, hoping to reach the Silver River by nightfall. It was already mid-afternoon, and they had no way of knowing how far they might be from the river. With the sun to serve as a guide, they felt more confident of their position than they had in the misty confines of the Black Oaks, where they had been forced to depend on their own unreliable sense of direction. They talked freely, brightened by the sunlight that had been absent for so many days, and by an unspoken feeling of gratitude that they were still alive following the harrowing experiences of the Mistmarsh. As they walked, small animals and high-flying birds scattered at their appearance. Once, in the fading light of the afternoon sun, Shay thought he caught sight of the small, hunched-over form of an old man some distance to the east, moving slowly away from them. But in that light and at that distance, he could not be certain, and an instant later found he could see no one after all. Flick had seen nothing, and the incident was forgotten. By dusk, they sighted a long, ribbon-thin stream of water to the north, which they quickly identified as the fabled Silver River, the source of the wondrous Rainbow Lake to the west, and of a thousand firelight tales of adventure. It was said that there was a legendary king of the Silver River, whose wealth and power was beyond description, but whose only concern was in keeping the waters of the great river running free and clean for man and animal alike. He was seldom seen by travelers, the story is related, but he was always there to offer aid, should any require it, or to deal out punishment for violation of his domain. On sighting the river, Shay and Flick could only tell that it appeared very beautiful in the fading light, the sort of faint silver color that the name implied. When they finally reached its edge, the evening had become too dark to permit them to see how clear the waters really were, but upon tasting it, they found it clean enough to drink. They found a small, grass-covered clearing on the south bank of the river, beneath the spreading shelter of two broad, old maple trees that offered an ideal campsite for the night. Even the short journey of that afternoon had tired them, and they preferred not to risk moving about in the dark in this open country. They had just about exhausted their supplies, and after this evening's meal, They would have to hunt for food. This was a particularly disheartening thought when they recalled that the only weapons they had between them for killing game were the short and highly ineffectual hunting knives. Menyon carried the only long bow. They ate the last of their supplies in silence without the use of a cooking fire, which might have called attention to their presence. The moon was half full and the night cloudless, so that the thousands of stars in the limitless galaxy shone in dazzling white, lighting up the river and the land beyond in an eerie, deep green brightness. After their meal was completed, Shay turned to his brother. "Have you thought about this trip? About this whole business of running away?" he queried. "I mean, what are we really doing?" "You're a funny one to ask that," exclaimed the other shortly. Shay smiled and nodded. "I suppose I am. But I have to justify it all to myself, and that's not an easy task. I can understand most of what Alanon told us, about the dangers of the heirs of the sword. But what good will it do for us to hide out in the Anar? This creature Brona must be after something besides the Sword of Shannara to go to all this trouble to search for the heirs of the Elven House. What is it he wants? What could it be?" Flick shrugged and tossed a pebble into the swift current of the lapping river, his own mind muddled, unable to offer any sensible answer. "Maybe he wants to take over," he suggested vaguely. "Doesn't everyone who gets a little power, sooner or later?" "No doubt," agreed Shay uncertainly, thinking that this special form of greed had brought the races to where they were today, following the long, bitter wars that had nearly destroyed all life. But it had been years since the last war, and the appearance of separate and disassociated communities seemed to have provided a partial answer to the long quest for peace. He turned back to a watchful Flick. "What are we going to do once we get to where we're going?"
"Alanon will tell us," his brother answered hesitantly.
"Alanon can't tell us what to do forever," replied Shay quickly. "Besides, I'm still not convinced that he has told us the truth about himself." Flick nodded his agreement, thinking back to that first chilling encounter with the dark giant who had tossed him about like a rag doll. His behavior had always struck Flick as that of a man who was used to having his way, and having it when and how he chose. He shivered involuntarily, recalling his first near discovery by the shadowy skull-bearer, and found himself confronted with the fact that it was Alanon who had saved him.
"I'm not sure I want to know the truth about any of this. I'm not sure I would understand," Flick murmured softly.
Shay was startled by the comment, and turned back to the moonlit waters of the river. "We may be only little people to Alanon," he acknowledged, "but from now on I don't move without a reason."
"Maybe so," his brother's voice drifted up to him. "But maybe..."
His voice trailed off ominously into the quiet sounds of the night and the river, and Shay chose not to pursue the matter. Both lay back and were quickly asleep, their tired thoughts flowing sluggishly into the bright, colorful dreams of the momentary world of sleep. In that secure, drifting dimension of fantasy, their weary minds could relax, releasing the hidden fears of tomorrow to emerge in whatever form they wished. And there, in that most distant sanctuary for the human soul, be faced privately and overcome. But even with the reassuring sounds of life all about them, and the peaceful rushing of the gleaming silver river to soothe their cares, an inescapable, gnawing specter of apprehension wormed its stealthy way into their dream world, and there, in full view of the mind's eye, it perched and waited, smiling dully, hatefully, knowing well the limits of their endurance. Both sleepers tossed fitfully, unable to shake the presence of this frightening apparition entrenched deep within them, more thought than form. Perhaps it was that same shadow of warning, radiating its special scent of fear that locked simultaneously in the restless minds of the Vale Men, and caused both to waken in the same startled instant, the sleep gone from their eyes and the air filled with stark, chilling madness that gripped them tightly and began to squeeze. They recognized it instantly, and panic shone dully in their eyes as they sat motionless, listening to the soundless night. Moments passed, and nothing happened. Still they remained immobile, their senses straining for the sounds they knew must come. Then they heard the dreaded flapping of the great wings, and together looked to the open river to see the hulking, silent form of the Skullbearer swoop almost gracefully from out of the lowlands across the river to the north and settle into a long glide, bearing directly toward their place of concealment. The Vale Men were frozen with terror, unable even to think, let alone move, as they watched the creature begin to close the distance between them. It did not matter that it had not yet seen them, perhaps did not even know that they were there. It would know in the next few seconds, and for the brothers there was no time to run, no place to hide, no chance to escape. Shay felt the dryness of his mouth, and somewhere within his scattered thoughts remembered the elf stones. But his mind had gone numb. He sat paralyzed with his brother and waited for the end. Miraculously, it did not come. Just when it seemed that the servant of the warlock lord must surely find them, a flash of light from the other bank caught its attention. Swiftly it winged away toward the light, and then there was another, a bit farther down, and then another. Or was it mistaken? It flew swiftly now, searching eagerly, its cunning mind telling it that the search was at an end, the long hunt over at last. Yet it could not find the source of the light. Suddenly the light flashed again, only to disappear in the swiftness of a blinking eye. The maddened creature swooped toward it, knowing it was deeper in the blackness across the river, lost somewhere in the thousands of small gullies and dales of the lowlands. The mysterious light flashed again and then again, each time moving farther inland, taunting, daring the angered beast to follow. On the other bank, the petrified figures of the two Vale Men remained concealed in the darkness as their frightened eyes watched the flying shadow move ever more swiftly away from them until it could no longer be seen. They remained immobile after the departure of the Skullbearer. Once again, they had come close to death and managed to elude its fatal touch. They sat quietly and listened as the mingled sounds of insect and animal returned to the night. Minutes passed, and they began to breathe more easily, their stiff poses relaxing into more comfortable slumps as they looked at each other in amazed relief, knowing the creature had gone, but unable to comprehend how it had happened. Then, before they had any chance at all to speak of the matter, the mysterious light that had flashed from across the river reappeared suddenly on a rise, several hundred yards in back of them, disappeared for an instant, and then flashed again, closer than before. Shay and Flick watched in wonderment as it moved toward them, weaving slightly. Moments later, the figure of an old, old man stood before them, bent with age and clothed in woodsman's garb, his hair silver in the starlight, his face framed by a long, white beard neatly trimmed and combed. The strange light in his hand appeared fiercely bright at this close distance, and there was no hint of a flame in its center. Suddenly it disappeared, and in its place was a cylindrical object gripped in the old man's gnarled hand. He looked at them and smiled a greeting. Shay looked quietly at his ancient face, sensing that the strange old man deserved his respect. "The light," Shay spoke finally. "How?" "A toy of people long since dead and gone." The voice rolled out in a steady whisper that drifted on the cool air. "Gone like the evil creature out there." The words trailed off, and he pointed in the direction of the departed Skullbearer, with a thin, wrinkled arm that seemed to hang in the night like some brittle stick of dead wood. Shay looked doubtfully at him, unsure of what should be done next.
"We're traveling eastward," Flick volunteered abruptly. "To the Anar."
The gentle voice cut him short, the elderly head nodding in understanding, the wrinkled eyes sharp in the soft moonlight as they looked from one brother to the other. Suddenly he moved past them to the edge of the swift river, and then turned back to them and motioned for them to sit. Shay and Flick did so without hesitation, unable to doubt the old man's intentions. As they sat, they felt a great weariness steal over their bodies, their eyes suddenly unable to remain open.
"Sleep, young travelers, that your journey may be shortened."
The voice became stronger in their minds, more commanding. They could not resist the feeling of weariness so pleasant and welcome, and they stretched out on the soft, grassy bank in obedience. The figure before them began to change slowly into something new, and through vague, blurred eyes and half-closed eyelids, it appeared that the old man was growing younger, and his clothes were not the same. Shay began to mutter slightly, trying to stay awake, to understand, but a moment later both Veilmen were asleep. As they slept, they drifted cloud-like through forgotten days of sunlight and happiness in the peaceful woodland home they had left so many days ago. Once again they roamed the friendly confines of the Dalm Forest and swam in the cool waters of the mighty Rappahalidran River, the fears and cares of a lifetime swept away in an instant. They moved through the wooded hills and vales of the countryside with freedom unlike anything they had ever experienced. In their sleep they touched, as if for the first time, each plant and animal, bird and insect, with new understanding of its importance as a living thing, however small and insignificant. They floated and drifted like the wind, able to smell the freshness of the land, able to see the beauty of the life nature had placed there. Everything was a kaleidoscope of color and smell, with only gentle sounds reaching their tired minds. Sounds of the open air and the quiet countryside. Forgotten were the long, hard days of travel through the mist-covered lowlands of Cleet, the sunless days where life was a lost soul wandering hopelessly in a dying land. Forgotten was the darkness of the black oaks, the madness of the endless, giant trees hiding them from the sun and sky. Gone was the memory of the mist wraith and the pursuing skull bearer, constant, relentless in its search. The young Veilmen moved in a world without the fears and cares of the real world, and for those hours, time dissipated into peace with the momentary beauty of a rainbow at the end of a sudden, violent storm. They did not know how long it was that they were lost to the world of dreams, nor did they know what it was that had happened to them in that time. They only knew, as they stirred into gentle wakefulness, that they were no longer at the edge of the Silver River. They knew as well that the time was new and somehow different. The feeling was exciting, but very secure. As his vision slowly returned, Shay was aware that there were people all around him, watching and waiting. He raised himself slowly up on one elbow, his hazy vision disclosing groups of small figures standing about, bending over in an anxious manner. From out of the vague background emerged a tall, commanding figure in loose-fitting clothes, leaning down to him, a broad hand on his slim shoulder. "Flick?" he cried apprehensively, rubbing his sleep-filled eyes with one hand as he squinted to make out the features of the shrouded figure.
"You're safe now, Shay." The deep voice seemed to roll out of the shadowy figure. "This is the Anar."
Shay blinked quickly, struggling to rise as the broad hand held him gently down. His eyes began to clear, and he saw in a glimpse the half-raised figure of his brother next to him, just waking from his deep slumber. Around them were the squat, heavy-set figures of men Shay instantly knew to be dwarfs. Shay's eyes caught the strong face of the figure at his side, and at the moment they came to rest on the gleaming chainmail encasing the hand and forearm stretched out to grasp his shoulder lightly, he knew the journey to the Anar was ended. They had found Cullhaven and Balinor. Minyan Lee had not found the last leg of the journey to the Anar quite so simple. When he first realized he had become separated from the two Vale men, panic set in. He was not afraid for himself, but he feared the very worst for the Ohmsfords if left alone to find their way out of the mist-shrouded Black Oaks. He too had called hopelessly, futilely, stumbling blindly about in the blackness until his voice was cracked. But in the end he was forced to admit to himself that the search was useless under such conditions. Exhausted, he pushed on through the woods in what he believed to be the general direction of the lowlands, consoling himself slightly with the promise that he would find the others in the daylight. He was in the forest a longer time than he had anticipated, breaking free near dawn and collapsing at the edge of the grasslands. Though he did not know it then, he had emerged at a point south of the Sleeping Brothers. By this time his endurance had been pushed to the limit, and sleep came over him so quickly that he could not remember anything after the slow, feather-light feeling of falling as he collapsed in the tall lowland grass. It seemed to him that he slept a very long time, but in fact he awakened only several hours after Shay and Flick had begun their journey toward the Silver River. Believing that he was a considerable distance south of the point the group had been making for while in the Black Oaks, Minyan quickly chose to travel north and try to cut across the trail of his companions before reaching the river. If he failed to find them by that time, he knew he would be confronted with the unpleasant probability that they were still lost in the entanglement of the woods. Hurriedly, the Highlander strapped on his light pack, shouldered the great ash bow and the sword of Lee, and began to march rapidly northward. The few hours of afternoon daylight remaining disappeared quickly as he walked, his sharp eyes searching carefully for any sign of human passage. It was almost dusk when he finally picked up the signs of someone traveling in the direction of the Silver River. He found the trail to be several hours old, and he could be reasonably certain that there was more than one person. But there was no way to tell who the travelers were, so Minyan pushed on hurriedly in the half-light of dusk, hoping to catch them when they stopped for the night. He knew that the Skull-Bearers would also be searching for them, but brushed his fears aside, remembering that there was no reason to connect him with the Vale Men. In any event, it was a calculated risk he had to take if he expected to be of any service to his friends. Shortly thereafter, just before the sun dropped behind the horizon completely, Minyan caught sight of a figure to the east of him, traveling in the opposite direction. Minyan quickly called out to the other, who seemed startled by the Highlander's sudden appearance, and tried to move away from him. Minyan quickly took up the chase, running after the frightened traveler and calling to him that he meant no harm. After several minutes, he caught the man, who turned out to be a peddler selling cooking ware to outlying villages and families in these lowlands. The peddler, a bent, timid individual who had been frightened badly by the unexpected pursuit, was now thoroughly terrified by the sight of the tall, sword-bearing Highlander facing him at nightfall in the middle of nowhere. Minyan hastily explained that he meant no harm, but was looking for two friends from whom he had become separated while traveling through the Black Oaks. This proved to be the worst thing he could have told the little man, who was now thoroughly convinced the stranger was insane. Minyan considered telling him that he was the Prince of Lee, but quickly discarded that idea. In the end, the peddler revealed to him that he had seen two travelers fitting the general description of the Vale Men from a distance earlier in the afternoon. Minyan could not tell if the man had told him that much for fear of his life or to humor him, but he accepted the tale and bade good evening to the little man, who was obviously delighted to be let off so easily, and made a hasty escape southward into the sheltering darkness of evening. Minion was forced to admit to himself that it was now too dark to attempt to follow the trail of his friends, so he cast about for a likely campsite. He found a pair of large pines that appeared to be the best shelter available, and he moved into them, glancing anxiously at the clear night sky. There was sufficient light to enable a prowling Northland creature to find any camped travelers with relative ease, and he inwardly prayed that his friends had sense enough to pick a carefully hidden spot to spend the night. He tossed down his own pack and weapons beneath one of the spreading pines and crawled under the shelter of its low-hanging branches. Famished from the past 2 days' journey, he devoured the last of his supplies, thinking as he did so that the Veilmen would be faced with the same food shortage in the days ahead. Grumbling aloud at the bad luck that had separated them, he reluctantly wrapped himself in his light blanket and was quickly asleep, the great sword of Lee unsheathed at his side, gleaming dully in the moonlight. Unaware of the events that had transpired that night while he slept soundly several miles south of the Silver River, Minion Lee rose the next day with a new plan in mind. If he could cut across country, traveling northeast, he could catch up with the Veilmen much more easily. He was certain that they would be following the edge of the Silver River as it wound its way eastward into the Anar forests, so their paths had to cross farther upriver. Abandoning the faint traces of the trail left the previous day, Minion began to journey across the lowlands in an easterly direction, thinking to himself that if he did not come across some sign of them upriver when he reached the water's edge, he could double back downstream. He also entertained hopes of sighting some small game that would provide meat for the evening meal. He whistled and sang to himself as he walked, his lean face relaxed and cheerful at the prospect of a reunion with his lost comrades. He could even picture the stolid disbelief on old Flick's stern face at the sight of his return. He walked easily with long, loping strides that covered the ground quickly and evenly, the swinging, measured step of the experienced woodsman and hunter. As he traveled, his thoughts drifted back to the events of the past several days, and he pondered the significance of all that had transpired. He knew little about the history of the great wars and the reign of the Druid Council, the mysterious appearance of the so-called warlock lord and his defeat by the combined might of three nations. Most disturbing of all was his almost total lack of knowledge of the legend behind the Sword of Shannara, the fabled weapon that for so many years had been a watchword symbolic of freedom through courage. Now, it was the birthright of an unknown orphan, half man, half elf. The thought was so preposterous that he still found it impossible to conceive of Shay in that role. He knew instinctively that something was missing from the picture. Something so basic to the whole puzzle of the great sword that without knowing what it was, the three friends were so many wind-blown leaves. Minion also knew that he was not a part of this adventure for the sake of friendship alone. Flick had been right about that. Even now he was unsure exactly why he had been persuaded to undertake this journey. He knew he was less than a prince of Lee should be. He knew that his interest in people had not been deep enough, and he had never really wanted to know them. He had never tried to understand the important problems of governing justly in a society where the monarch's word was the only law. Yet he felt that in his own way, he was as good as any man alive. Shay believed he was a man to be looked up to. Perhaps so, he thought idly, but his life to date appeared to consist of one long line of harrowing experiences and wild escapades that had served little or no constructive purpose. The smooth, grass-covered lowlands changed to rough, barren ground, rising abruptly in small hills and dropping sharply into steep, trench-like valleys that made travel slow and almost hazardous in places. Minion looked anxiously ahead for some indication of more level terrain, but it was impossible to see very far, even from the top of the steep rises. He plodded on, deliberately and steadily, ignoring the roughness of the ground and silently berating his decision to come that way. His mind wandered briefly, then suddenly snapped back as he caught the sound of a human voice. He listened intently for several seconds, but could hear nothing further, and dismissed it as the wind or his imagination. A moment later he heard it again, only this time it was the clear sound of a woman's voice, singing softly somewhere ahead of him, faint and low. He walked more quickly, wondering if his ears were playing tricks on him, but all the time hearing the woman's mellow voice grow louder. Soon the mesmeric sound of her singing filled the air in a gay, almost wild abandon that reached into the innermost depths of the Highlander's mind, bidding him to follow, to be as free as the song itself. Almost in a trance, he walked steadily on, smiling broadly at the images the happy song conjured up to him. Vaguely he wondered what a woman would be doing in these bleak lowlands, miles from any kind of civilization. But the song seemed to dispel all his doubts in its warm assurance that it came from the heart. At the peak of a particularly bleak rise, somewhat higher than the surrounding hillocks, Minion found her sitting beneath a small, twisted tree with long, gnarled branches that reminded him of willow roots. She was a young girl, very beautiful, and obviously very much at home in these lands as she sang brightly, seemingly oblivious to anyone who might be attracted by the sound of her voice. He did not conceal his approach, but moved straight to her side, smiling gently at her freshness and youth. She smiled back at him, but made no effort to rise nor to greet him, continuing the gay strains of the tune she had been singing all this time. The Prince of Lee came to a halt several feet away from her, but she quickly beckoned him to come closer and sit next to her beneath the odd-shaped tree. It was then that from somewhere deep within him, a small warning nerve twinged. Some sixth sense, not yet entranced by her vibrant song, tugged at him and demanded to know why this young girl should ask a complete stranger to sit with her. There was no reason for his hesitation other than perhaps the innate distrust the hunter has for all things out of place and time in nature. But whatever the reason, it caused the Highlander to pause. In that instant, the girl and the song disappeared into vapor, leaving Minion to face the strange-looking tree on the barren rise. For 1 second, Minion hesitated, unable to believe what had just occurred, and then hastily moved to withdraw. But the loose ground about his feet opened even as he paused, releasing a heavy cluster of thick, gnarled roots which wound themselves tightly about the young man's ankles, holding him fast. Minion stumbled over backward, trying to break free. For a moment he found his predicament to be ludicrous. But try as he might, he could not work free of those clinging roots. The strangeness of the situation increased almost immediately as he glanced up to see the strange root-limbed tree, previously immobile, approaching in a slow, stretching motion, its limbs extended toward him, their tips containing small but deadly-looking needles. Thoroughly aroused now, Minion dropped his pack and bow in one motion and unsheathed the great sword, realizing that the girl and the song had been an illusion to draw him within reach of this ominous tree. He cut briefly at the roots which bound him, severing them in places, but the work was slow because they were wound so tightly about his ankles that he could not risk broad strokes. Sudden panic set in as he realized he could not get free in time, but he forced the feeling down and shouted his defiance at the plant, which by now was almost on top of him. Swinging in fury as it came within reach, he quickly severed a number of the clutching limbs and it withdrew slightly, its whole frame shuddering in pain. Minion knew that with its next approach he had to strike its nerve center if he expected to destroy it.
But the strange tree had other ideas. Coiling its limbs into itself, it thrust them toward the imprisoned traveler one at a time, showering him with the tiny needles that flew off the ends. Many of them missed altogether, and some bounced harmlessly off his heavy tunic and boots. But others struck the exposed skin of his hands and head and embedded themselves with small, stinging sensations. Minion tried to brush them off while protecting himself from further assault, but the little needles broke off, leaving their tips embedded in his skin. He felt a kind of slow drowsiness begin to steal over him, and portions of his nervous system begin to go numb. He realized at once that the needles contained some sort of drug that was designed to put the plant's victim to sleep, to render it helpless for easy disposition. Wildly, he fought the feeling seeping through his system, but soon dropped helplessly to his knees, unable to fight it, knowing that the tree had won. But amazingly, the deadly tree appeared to hesitate, and then to inch slightly backward, coiling again in attack. Slow, heavy footsteps sounded behind the fallen prince, approaching cautiously. He could not turn his head to see who it was, and a deep bass voice warned him abruptly to remain motionless. The tree coiled expectantly to strike, but an instant before it released its deadly needles, it was struck with shattering impact by a huge mace that flew over the shoulder of the fallen minion. The strange tree was completely toppled by the blow. Obviously injured, it struggled to raise itself and fight back. Behind him, Minion heard the sharp release of a bowstring, and a long black arrow embedded itself deep within the plant's thick trunk. Immediately, the roots about his feet released their grip and sank into the earth, and the main portion of the tree shuddered violently, limbs thrashing the air and showering needles in all directions. A moment later, it drooped slowly to the earth. With a final spasm, it lay motionless. Still heavily drugged from the needles, Minion felt the strong hands of his rescuer grip his shoulders roughly and force him into a prone position, while a broad hunting knife severed the few remaining strands binding his feet. The figure before him was a powerfully built dwarf, dressed in the green and brown woodsman's clothing worn by most of that race. He was tall for a dwarf, a little over 5 feet, and carried a small arsenal of weapons bound about his broad waist. He looked down at the drugged minion and shook his head dubiously.
"You must be a stranger to do a dumb thing like that," he reprimanded the other in his deep bass voice. "Nobody with any sense plays around with the sirens."
"I'm from Lee. To the west," Minion managed to gasp out, his voice thick and strange to his own ears.
"A Highlander. I might have known."
The dwarf laughed heartily to himself.
"You'd have to be, I suppose. Well, don't worry. You'll be fine in a few days. That drug won't kill you if we get it treated, but you'll be out for a while."
He laughed again and turned to retrieve his mace. Minion, with his final ounce of strength, grasped him by the tunic.
"I must reach the Anar. Cullhaven," he gasped sharply. "Take me to Balinor."
The dwarf looked back at him sharply, but Minion had lapsed into unconsciousness. Muttering to himself, the dwarf picked up his own weapons and those of the fallen Highlander. Then, with surprising strength, he heaved the limp form of Minion over his broad shoulders, testing the load for balance. Satisfied at last that all was in place, he began trudging steadily, muttering all the while, moving toward the forests of the Anar. Chapter 8 Flick Ohmsford sat quietly on a long stone bench in one of the upper levels of the lavishly beautiful Mead Gardens in the dwarf community known as Cullhaven. He had a perfect view of the amazing gardens stretching down the rocky hillside in systematic levels that tapered off about the edges in carefully laid pieces of cut stone,
reminiscent of a long waterfall flowing down a gentle slope. The creation of the gardens on this once barren hillside was a truly marvelous accomplishment. Special soils had been hauled from more fertile regions to be placed on the garden site, enabling thousands of beautiful flowers and plants to flourish year-round in the mild climate of the lower Anar. The color was indescribable. To compare the myriad hues of the flowers to the colors of the rainbow would have been a great injustice. Flick attempted briefly to count the various shades, a task he soon found to be impossible. He gave up quickly and turned his attention to the large clearing at the foot of the gardens, where members of the dwarf community were passing on their way to or from whatever work they were engaged in. They were a curious people, it seemed to Flick, so dedicated to hard work and a well-guarded order of life. Everything they did was always carefully planned in advance, meticulously thought out to a point where even the cautious Flick was nettled by the time spent in preparation. But the people were friendly and eager to be of service, a kindness not lost on either of the visiting Vale men, who felt more than a bit out of place in this strange land. They had been in Cullhaven for 2 days now, and still they had not been able to learn what had happened to them, why they were there, or how long their stay would be. Balinor had told them nothing, advising them that he knew very little himself, and that all would be revealed in due time, a comment Flick found to be not only melodramatic but aggravating. There was no sign of Alanon, no word of his whereabouts. Worst of all, there was no news of the absent minion, and the brothers had been forbidden to leave the safety of the dwarf village for any reason. Flick glanced to the floor of the gardens again to see if his personal bodyguard was still there, and quickly spied him off to one side, his tireless gaze fixed on the Veilman. Shay had been infuriated by this treatment, but Balinor was quick to point out that someone should be with them at all times in case of an attempt on their lives by one of the roving Northland creatures. Flick had acquiesced readily, remembering all too well the close calls he had already had with the Skullbearers. He put aside his idle thoughts at the approach of Shay on the winding garden path. "Anything?" Flick asked anxiously as the other reached his side and sat down quietly next to him. "Not one word," came the short reply. Shay felt vaguely exhausted all over again, even though he had had 2 days to recover from the strange odyssey that had brought them from their home in Shady Vale to the forests of Anar. Their treatment had been decent, if sometimes a bit overdone, and the people seemed genuinely concerned for their welfare. But there had been no word given out as to what was to happen next. Everyone, including Balinor, seemed to be waiting for something, perhaps the arrival of the long-absent Alanon. Balinor had been unable to explain to them how they had reached the Anar. Responding to a mysterious flashing light, he had found them lying on a low riverbank just outside of Cullhaven 2 days ago, and had brought them to the village. He knew nothing of the old man, nor of how they had traveled that long distance upstream. When Shay mentioned the legends concerning a king of the Silver River, Balinor shrugged and nonchalantly agreed that anything was possible. "No news of Menyon?" Flick asked hesitantly. "Only that the dwarfs are still out looking for him. And it may take some time," Shay answered quietly. "I don't know what to do next." Flick inwardly conceded that this last admission had proved to be the story of the entire outing. He glanced downward to the foot of the Mead Gardens, where a small cluster of heavily armed dwarfs were congregating around the commanding figure of Balinor, who had suddenly appeared from the woods beyond. Even from their vantage point atop the gardens, the Vale men could tell that he still wore the chainmail beneath the long hunting cloak they had come to recognize so well. He spoke earnestly with the dwarfs for a few minutes, his face lined in thought. Shay and Flick knew very little about the Prince of Callahorn, but the people of Cullhaven seemed to have the highest regard for him. Menyon, too, had spoken well of Balinor. His homeland was the northernmost kingdom of the sprawling Southland. Commonly referred to as the Borderlands, it served as a buffer zone fronting the southern boundaries of the Northland. The citizens of Callahorn were predominantly men, but unlike the majority of the people of their race, they mingled freely with the other races and did not pursue a policy of isolationism. The highly regarded Border Legion was quartered in that distant country, a professional army commanded by Rule Buckhanna, King of Callahorn and the father of Balinor. Historically, the entire Southland had relied on Callahorn and the Legion to blunt the initial thrust of an invading army, giving the rest of the land a chance to prepare for battle. In the 500 years since its formation, the Border Legion had never been defeated. Balinor had begun a slow ascent to the stone bench where the Vale men sat patiently waiting. He smiled a greeting as he came up to them, aware of the discomfort they felt in not knowing what was to happen to them, and of the anxiety they were experiencing for the safety of their missing friend. He sat down next to them, and was silent for a few minutes before speaking. "I know how difficult this must be for you," he began patiently. "I have every available dwarf warrior out looking for your lost friend. If anyone can find him in this region, they will, and they won't give up, I promise you." The brothers nodded their understanding of Balinor's efforts to help them in any way possible. "This is a very dangerous time for these people, though I suppose Alanon did not speak of it. They are facing the threat of an invasion through the upper Anar by gnomes. There have already been skirmishes all along the border and signs of a huge army massing somewhere above the Strelaheim Plains. You may have guessed that all of this is tied in with the Warlock Lord."
"Does this mean that the Southland is in danger too?" asked an anxious Flick.
"Undoubtedly." Balinor nodded. "That's one reason why I'm here. To arrange a coordinated defensive strategy with the Dwarf Nation in case of an all-out assault."
"But where is Alanon then?" asked Shay quickly. "Is he going to get here soon enough to help us? What has the Sword of Shannara got to do with all this?"
Balinor looked at the puzzled faces and shook his head slowly. "I must honestly confess that I cannot give you the answers to any of those questions. Alanon is a very mysterious figure, but a wise man who has been a dependable ally whenever we have needed him in the past. When I saw him last, several weeks before I spoke to you in Shady Vale, we set a date to meet in the Anar. He is already 3 days overdue." He paused in quiet speculation, looking down at the gardens and beyond to the great trees of the Anar forests, listening to the sounds of the woods and the low voices of the dwarfs moving about in the clearing below. Then abruptly a shout went up from a cluster of dwarfs at the foot of the gardens, joined almost immediately by the shouts and cries of others mingled in with a huge clamor swelling from the woods beyond the village of Cullhaven. The men on the stone bench rose uncertainly, looking quickly about for some sign of danger. Balinor's strong hand came to rest on the pommel of his broadsword, strapped tightly at his side beneath the hunting cloak. A moment later, one of the dwarfs below came rushing up the path, shouting wildly as he ran.
"They found him! They found him!"
he yelled excitedly, almost stumbling in his haste to reach them. Shay and Flick exchanged startled looks. The runner came to a breathless stop before them, and Balinor gripped his shoulder excitedly. "Have they found Minyan Lee?" he demanded quickly. The dwarf nodded happily, his short, stocky frame heaving with the exertion of the dash to reach them with the good news. Without a word, Balinor bounded down the path toward the shouting, Shay and Flick behind him. They reached the clearing below in a matter of seconds and ran along the main path through the woods leading to the village of Cullhaven, several hundred yards beyond. Ahead of them, they could hear the excited shouting of the dwarf population congratulating whomever it was who had found the lost Highlander. They reached the village, and pushing through the throngs of dwarfs blocking the way, made straight for the center of all the excitement. A ring of guards parted to let them into a small courtyard formed by buildings on the right and left, and a high stone wall in the rear. On a long wooden table lay the motionless body of Minyan Lee, his face pale and seemingly lifeless. A team of dwarf doctors bent dutifully over the inert form, apparently treating him for some injury. Shay gave a sharp cry and tried to rush forward, but Balinor's strong arm held him back as the warrior called out to one of the nearby dwarfs.
"Pan, what's happened here?"
The solid-looking dwarf, dressed in armor and apparently one of the returning search party, hastened to their side.
"He'll be all right after he's treated. He was found entangled in one of the sirens out in the middle of the Battle Mound lowlands below the Silver River. Our search party didn't find him. It was Hendel, returning from the cities south of Anar."
Balinor nodded and looked about for some sign of the rescuer.
"He left for the assembly hall to make his report," the dwarf responded to the unasked question.
Motioning the two Vale men to follow him, Balinor made his way out of the courtyard through the crowd and across the main street to the large assembly hall. Inside were the offices of the governing officials of the village and the assembly room, in which they found the dwarf Hendel sitting on one of the long benches, eating ravenously while a scribe took down his report. Hendel looked up as they approached, glanced curiously at the Vale men, and nodded briefly to Balinor, continuing to devour his meal without interruption. Balinor dismissed the scribe, and the three men sat down across from the disinterested dwarf, who appeared both exhausted and starved.
"What an idiot, tackling one of those sirens with a sword," he muttered.
"Got spunk, though. How is he?"
"He'll be fine after he's treated," replied Balinor, grinning reassuringly at the uneasy Vale men.
"How did you find him?"
"Heard him yelling."
The other continued to eat without pausing.
"I had to carry him almost 7 miles before I ran into Pan and the search party along the Silver River."
He paused and looked again at the two Vale men, who were listening intently. The dwarf appraised them curiously and looked back at Balinor, eyebrows raised. "Friends of the Highlander, and of Alanon," responded the borderman, cocking his head meaningfully. Hendel merely nodded to them curtly.
"I'd never have known who he was if he hadn't mentioned your name," Hendel informed them shortly, indicating the tall borderman. "It might help matters if now and then someone would tell me what was going on. Before it's happened, not after."
He declined to comment further, and an amused Balinor smiled over to the puzzled brothers, shrugging slightly to indicate the dwarf was irascible by nature. Shay and Flick were a bit uncertain about the fellow's temperament and had purposely kept silent while the other two conversed, though both Vale men were eager to hear the full story behind Menyon's rescue. "What's your report on Stern and Wayford?" Balinor asked finally, referring to the large southland cities immediately south and west of the Anar. Hendel ceased eating and laughed abruptly.
"The officials of those two fine communities will consider the matter and send along a report. Typical bungling officials, elected by the disinterested people to juggle the ball until it can be passed on to some other fool. I could tell 5 minutes after I opened my mouth that they thought I was crazy. They don't see the danger until the sword is at their own throats. Then they scream for assistance from those of us who knew it all along."
He paused and resumed his meal, obviously disgusted with the whole subject.
"I should have expected that, I suppose."
Balinor sounded worried. "How can we convince them of the danger? There hasn't been a war in so many years that no one wants to believe it could happen now."
"That's not the real problem, as you well know," interjected the irate Hendel. "They simply don't feel they should be involved in the matter. After all, the frontiers are protected by dwarfs, not to mention the cities of Kalahorn and the Border Legion. We've been doing it up to now. Why can't we keep doing it? Those poor fools. He trailed off slowly, finished with his statement and his meal, feeling tired from the long trip home. He had been on the road for almost 3 weeks, traveling to the cities of the Southland, and it all seemed to have been for nothing. He felt keenly discouraged.
"I don't understand what's happened," Shay announced quietly.
"Well, that's two of us," Hendel replied sullenly. "I'm going to bed for about 2 weeks. See you then." He stood up abruptly and walked out of the assembly room without even a short farewell, his broad shoulders stooped wearily. The three men watched him go without speaking, their eyes fixed on his departing silhouette until it was lost from sight. Then Shay turned questioningly to Balinor. "It's the age-old tale of complacency, Shay." The tall warrior sighed deeply and stretched as he rose. "We may be standing on the brink of the greatest war in 1,000 years, but no one wants to accept the fact. Everyone gets in the same rut. Let a few take care of the gates to the city while the rest forget and go back to their homes. It becomes a habit, depending on a few to protect the rest. And then one day, the few are not enough. The enemy is within the city, right through the open gates."
"Is there really going to be a war?" Flick asked, almost fearfully.
"That is the question, exactly," Balinor responded slowly. "The only man who can give us the answer is absent, and overdue." In the excitement of finding Menyon alive and well, the Vale men had temporarily forgotten Alanon, the man who was the reason for their being in the Anar in the first place. The by now familiar questions again flashed through their minds with new persistency, but the Vale men had learned to live with them over the past few weeks, and all doubts were reluctantly shoved aside once more. Balinor caught their attention as he moved toward the open door, and they quickly followed.
"You mustn't mind Hendel, you know," he reassured them as they walked. "He's gruff like that with everyone, but he's one of the finest friends you could ask for. He has fought and outwitted the gnomes along the Upper Anar for years, protecting his people and the complacent citizens of the Southland who so quickly forget the crucial role the dwarfs play as guardians of these borders. The gnomes would like to get their hands on him, I can tell you." Shay and Flick said nothing, ashamed of the fact that the people of their own race could be so selfish, yet realizing that they too had been ignorant of the situation in the Anar before hearing of it from Balinor. They were bothered by the thought of renewed hostilities between the races, recalling their history lessons on the old race wars and the terrible hatred of those bitter years. The possibility of a third war of the races was chilling.
"Why don't you two go on back to the gardens?" advised the Prince of Kalahorn. "I'll have a message sent as soon as I hear of any change in Minion's condition." The brothers reluctantly agreed, knowing they had no other choice in the matter anyway. Before turning in that night, they stopped by the room where Menyon was being kept, only to be told by the dwarf sentry that their friend was asleep and should not be disturbed. But by the following afternoon, the Highlander was awake and being visited by the anxious Vale men. Even Flick was grudgingly relieved to see the other alive and well, though he solemnly intoned that he had correctly predicted their misfortune many days in advance when they first decided to journey through the Black Oaks. Menyon and Shay both laughed at Flick's eternal pessimism, but did not argue the point. Shay explained how Menyon had been brought to Cullhaven by the dwarf Hendel, and then went on to relate the mysterious way in which he and Flick had been found near the Silver River. Menyon was as mystified as they over their strange journey, and could offer no logical explanation.
Shay carefully refrained from mentioning the legend of a king of the Silver River, knowing full well what the Highlander's response would be to any speculation that involved an old folktale. That same day, in the early hours of the evening, word reached them that Al-Anon had returned. Shay and Flick were about to leave their rooms to visit Menyon when they heard the excited shouts of dwarves rushing past their open windows toward the assembly hall where some sort of meeting was about to begin. The anxious Veilmen had not taken two steps beyond their doorway when they were surrounded by a team of four dwarf guards and hustled quickly through the pushing crowds, past the open doors of the large assembly into a small adjoining room, where they were told to remain. The dwarfs closed the door wordlessly as they exited, slid the lock bolts into place, and assumed positions immediately outside. The room was brightly lit and furnished with several long tables and benches, at which the bewildered Veilmen silently seated themselves. The windows to the room were closed, and even without checking, Shay knew they would be barred like the door. From the assembly hall they could hear the deep voice of a single speaker. Several minutes later the door to the chamber opened, and Menyon, looking flushed but otherwise quite well, was briskly ushered in by two dwarf guards. When they were left alone, the Highlander explained that they had come for him the same as for the Veilmen. From snatches of conversation he had heard on the way over, it appeared that the dwarfs in Cullhaven, and probably all of the Anar, were preparing for war. Whatever news Al-Anon had brought back with him had thrown matters into a state of confusion in the dwarf community. He thought he had caught a quick glimpse of Balinor through the open doors of the assembly hall, standing on the platform at the front of the building, but the guards had rushed him past, and he couldn't be sure. The voices from the congregation next door rose in a thunderous roar, and all three paused expectantly. Seconds passed as the shouting continued to roll through the large hall, spreading to the open grounds outside where it was taken up by the dwarfs there. At the deafening peak of the shouting, the door to their room suddenly burst open to admit the dark, commanding figure of Al-Anon. He walked over to the Veilmen quickly, shook their hands, and congratulated them on their successful journey to Cullhaven. He was dressed as he had been when Flick had first encountered him, his lean face half hidden in the long cowl, his whole appearance dark and foreboding. He greeted Menyon courteously and moved to the head of the nearest table, motioning the others to be seated. He had been followed into the room by Balinor and a number of dwarfs, who were apparently leaders in the community, among them the irascible Hendel. Bringing up the rear of this procession were two slim, almost shadowy figures in curious, loose-fitting woodsman garb, who quietly took seats near Al-Anon at the head of the table. Shay could see them clearly from his position at the other end, and concluded after a quick observation that they were elves from the distant Westland. Their keen features, from the sharply raised eyebrows to the strange pointed ears, marked them distinctively. Shay turned back and saw that both Flick and Menyon were looking at him curiously, obviously appraising his own strong resemblance to the strangers. None of them had ever seen an elf, and while they knew that Shay was half-elf and had heard descriptions given of the elven people, none had ever had a chance to compare the Veilmen to one. "My friends," the deep voice of Al-Anon boomed out in the slight stir of voices as he rose commandingly to his full height of 7 feet. The room was instantly silent as all faces turned in his direction. "My friends, I must now tell you what I have as yet told no one else. We have suffered a tragic loss." He paused and looked at the anxious faces in turn. "Paranor has fallen. A division of gnome hunters under the command of the warlock lord has seized the Sword of Shannara." There was dead silence for about 2 seconds before the dwarfs were on their feet, shouting in anger. Balinor rose quickly in an effort to quiet them. Shay and Flick looked at each other in disbelief. Only Menyon seemed unsurprised by the announcement, his lean face carefully scrutinizing the dark figure at the head of the table.
Paranor was taken from within, Alanon continued after some semblance of order had been restored. There is little question as to the fate of those who guarded the fortress and the sword. I am told that all were executed. No one knows exactly how it happened.
Have you been there? Shay asked suddenly, feeling almost immediately that it was a stupid question.
I left your home in the Vale so suddenly because I received word that an attempt would be made to secure Paranor. I arrived too late to help those within and barely escaped detection myself. That is one of the reasons I am so late in reaching Cullhaven.
But if Paranor has fallen and the sword been taken?
Flick's whispered question trailed off ominously.
Then what can we do now? Alanon finished harshly. This is the problem facing us, the one we must provide an immediate answer for. The reason for this council.
Alanon suddenly left his position at the head of the long table and moved around until he was standing directly behind Shay. He placed one great hand on the slim shoulder and faced his attentive audience.
The sword of Shannara is useless in the hands of the warlock lord. It can only be raised by a son of the house of Gerald Shannara. This alone prevents the evil one from striking now. Instead, he has systematically hunted down and destroyed all members of that house, one at a time, one after another, even those I tried to protect. All whom I could find. Now they are all dead. All save one. And that one is young Shay. Shay is only half elf, but he is a direct descendant of the king who carried the great sword so many years before. Now he must raise it once again. Shay would have bolted for the door if it had not been for the strong hand gripping his shoulder. He looked desperately at Flick and saw the fear in his own eyes mirrored in those of his brothers. Menyon had not moved, but appeared visibly impressed by this grim declaration. What Alanon seemed to expect from Shay was more than any man had the right to ask. Well, I think we have shaken our young friend a bit.
Alanon laughed shortly.
Do not despair, Shay. Things are not as bad as they may seem to you right now.
He turned abruptly, walked back to the head of the table, and faced the others.
We must recover the sword at all costs. There is no other choice left to us. If we fail to do this, the whole of the land will be plunged into the greatest war the races have seen since the near destruction of life 2,000 years ago. The sword is the key. Without it, we must fall back on our mortal strength, our fighting prowess. A battle with iron and muscle that can only result in uncountable thousands dying on both sides. The evil is the warlock lord, and he cannot be destroyed without the aid of the sword. And the courage of a few men, not the least of whom must be those of us in this room.
Again he paused to measure the force of his words. There was absolute silence as he looked doubtfully at the silent gallery of grim faces staring back. Suddenly Menyon Lee rose at the far end of the table and faced the giant speaker.
What you are suggesting is that we go after the sword. To Paranor.
Alanon nodded slowly, a half-smile playing over his thin lips as he waited for a reaction from the startled listeners. His deep-set eyes twinkled blackly beneath the great brow, watching carefully the faces about him. Menyon sat down slowly, total disbelief showing plainly on his handsome features, as Alanon continued.
The sword is still at Perenor. There is an excellent possibility that it will remain there. Neither Brona nor the bearers of the skull can personally remove the talisman. Its mere physical presence is an anathema to their continued existence in the mortal world. Any form of exposure for more than several minutes would cause excruciating pain. This means that any attempt to transport the sword north to the Skull Kingdom must be accomplished by use of the gnomes that hold Perenor. Eventine and his elven warriors were given the task of securing the druid stronghold and the sword. While Perenor has been lost to us, the elves still hold the southern stretch of the Strelaheim, north of the fortress, and any attempt to travel north to the Dark Lord would require breaking through their patrols. Apparently Eventine was not at Perenor when it was taken, and I have no reason to believe that he will not endeavor to regain the sword, or at the very least, thwart any attempt to remove it. The Warlock Lord will be aware of this, and I do not think he will risk losing the weapon by having the gnomes carry it out. Instead, he will entrench at Perenor until his army moves south. There is a possibility that the Warlock Lord does not expect us to attempt to regain the sword. He may believe that the House of Shannara has been exterminated. He may expect us to concentrate on strengthening our defenses against his forthcoming assault. If we act immediately, a small party may be able to slip into the keep undetected and retrieve the sword. Such an undertaking would be dangerous, but if there is even the remotest chance of success, the risk is worth it. Balinor had risen and indicated he wished to speak to those assembled. Alanon nodded and sat down.
I do not understand the power of the sword over the Warlock Lord. That much I freely admit, the tall warrior began. But I do know the threat that we all face if Brona's army invades the Southland and the Anar, as our reports indicate it is preparing to do. My homeland will be the first to face this threat, and if I can prevent it in any way, then I cannot do otherwise. I will go with Alanon. The dwarfs leaped up again at this point and enthusiastically shouted their support. Alanon stood up and raised his long arm in a plea for silence. These two young elves at my side are cousins of Eventine. They will accompany me. For their sake, in this matter, is at least as great as your own. Balinor will go as well, and I will take one of the dwarf chieftains, no more. This must be a small, highly skilled party of hunters if we are to succeed. Pick the best man among you, and let him come with us. He looked to the end of the table where Shay and Flick sat watching in a mixed state of shock and confusion. Menyon Lee pondered quietly, looking at no one in particular. Alanon glanced expectantly at Shay, his grim face suddenly softening as he saw the frightened eyes of the young Veilman who had come so far, through so many dangers, to this apparent haven of safety, only to be told that he was expected to leave it for an even more perilous trip northward. But there had been no time to break the news to the Veilman in a gentle way. He shook his head doubtfully and waited.
"I think I had better go."
The abrupt declaration.